Hi, and welcome to Preoccupied. Today we're going to be talking with Scott Greenspan, a doctoral candidate from the University of Massachusetts Amherst and a doctoral intern at the Judge Baker Children's Center.
Yes. So I met Scott while I was working at Camp Baker, which is a little sub-program in Judge Baker Children's Center. So Judge Baker's Children's Center is a Harvard Medical School affiliate that focuses on child mental health. And it it's a huge leader in that field, and everything they do is backed up by research and just the most incredible supportive team of people that I've been able to work with. So being able to talk to Scott, who's one of those incredible supportive people, was such an insightful experience. And we're gonna talk to him a lot about his experience as a doctoral candidate, but also about what kind of things he's researching and what he's looking forward to and why he chose to take that step on that journey. One of Scott's research interests, which is kind of influenced by something that's really important to him in his personal life, is exercise. And he's not the first one to be interested in this topic.
Yeah, there's a lot of research behind how physical activity and exercise can help people maintain good mental health. And when we look at things like this that have physiological effects, we think about primary gain and secondary gain. So what outcomes are a direct result of what you're doing? And that'd be primary gain. And then what other things kind of come along with that?
Right, so some examples of the primary gain might be how exercise releases endorphins. That's a big thing people talk about, which make you happy, like chocolate and other things. And I'm sure you've heard about research about how exercise can reduce anxiety. If you're a more restless person like I am, like I didn't go on a run today and my knees are just bouncing right now. But there's also this thing, like Zena described, secondary gain of, you know, getting out there.
Yeah, so from that, a lot of the effects might come from just having a routine and keeping to it with exercise. Like if you go for a half hour run every morning, then keeping to that schedule of activity can help combat a lot of like the lethargy and other things that happen with depression where you just don't want to get up and do anything.
Right. Sometimes having an exercise regimen will give you a structure.
Yeah. And just keeping you active and doing things. And then also it a lot of times fosters like positive social interaction where you see other people, you know, maybe on your run or going to the gym or something like that.
Yeah. And you know, you do the little nod and the little wave like as runners do as they're going by each other, just dying, you know. I know, it's interesting, like my own cognitive dissonance, you know, as I'm reading these research articles, like because I have never been a super athletic person, and then you see how can I be a psychology major and kind of knock the importance of that mind-body relationship, you know? So lately, just trying to reframe how I look at exercise as something that I do for myself is something that Scott talks a lot about, or something that helps get my mind off what I'm thinking about, or keeps me from shaking my leg in class, or burning off some energy. And I challenge you to do the same as we talk about it, how helpful it is for Scott and his self-care in our interview.
Scott Greenspan of University of Massachusetts Amherst.
Yes.
He is a doctoral candidate in the school psychology program. So, Scott, could you tell me a little bit about your education up to this point?
Yes, absolutely. First of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to chat with you today. Yeah, so my current field of study is school psychology. I've completed 4 years of study in that field, and then before starting my PhD, I did my master's in mental health counseling for 2 years, and I did that at the University of Massachusetts Boston. I'm like a UMass,
yeah,
UMass person. And then before that, I studied psychology at the University of Massachusetts Boston as well. So I went right from my bachelor's to my master's program, and I took a year off and worked as an outreach clinician, so providing psychotherapeutic supports to youth and families. And then I started my PhD after that. It's kind of a quick synopsis. I'm happy to dive in deeper as we engage in this conversation.
So what drew you to psychology as an undergrad at UMass Boston?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I've always been really interested in just the human condition, how we're all so different and diverse, and I've also been fascinated in just like what it means to seek support and how we can help some people in one specific way and then other interventions help other people. And so I found that I was always someone who enjoyed helping others. And that sounds a little selfish as I hear it now. I'm like, oh, I got some, you know, some excitement out of helping other people. But I think that I do have a genuine interest in providing support for other people. And I wanted to study that even deeper and just learn more about how we interact and how different environmental structures support our behaviors and how different group dynamics shape us. That's always been really fascinating for me. Ironically, though, I knew I had this interest, but I tried so hard to not study psychology in some ways because I knew that if I wanted to become a psychologist, it was a long road ahead. And so it's funny, I was like,
Computer science be my passion, please?
Yeah, I did that. I tried comp sci. I took some business courses. You know what? Then I can just go right out of undergrad and get a job. And for some people, I think they really value, they're okay with liking their job and not loving it. And for me, I think I learned that I really want to love what I do. So then I, you know, bit the bullet and started taking some more liberal arts courses, and I loved my soc class. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I really like thinking about like these systems and these macro structures and how they affect people. And then I dug deeper into psychology and started getting into research and started doing volunteer work with various populations. And I really found my passion for it. And then I just decided like, this is what I want to do. And I want to keep going. And, you know, at every benchmark of my education, I was like, should I stop here? So like after my undergrad, I was like, what can I do?
How much farther can we go?
Yeah. And after my master's, I was like, you know what, maybe, or while beginning my master's, I was like, you know, maybe I'll work as a clinician and that'd be great. I can get licensed as a therapist. And then I really was enjoying my research. And I was like, I think I like the idea of teaching as well as clinical work. So I went further on and here I am, almost completed with my PhD. So it's really exciting looking back at all those experiences.
Yeah, and it all started with right at UMass Boston. And now you're taking this whole journey is kind of full circle.
Yeah.
Back in Boston.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I'm back in Boston for my final internship year. I'm really excited about it. It's a really great placement.
Man, you're just totally like speaking my language. That's definitely how I describe it as well. Because you know, you read all through school, you read all these like great tragic heroes, and like, you know, you read about these historical figures and all these things, and it's like we all kind of have the same, you know, like just like you were talking about with the human condition is so, that just so like resonates with me. That's totally what fascinates me about psych as well. And it's interesting that like I feel like a lot of people that I've talked to, you know, they like work isn't just work, you know, when I feel like once you get to the level that you're at now, like the people that you meet who are pursuing that, depth of education, like they're doing it because they like to have a 9-to-5 job, you know, maybe. But like, you know, you just leave at work and you don't think about it again once you clock out is a great fit for some people. And then for other people, like kind of get what you put in back out.
Yeah, for sure. And when you have such a passion, I also need to know when to dial it down and really thinking about work-life balance.
Yeah.
So that's also a challenge too, because you also want to think about ensuring that you're engaging in self-care, given what you need to other facets of your life, and really knowing like when to dial work down so you can enjoy other aspects too.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Certainly something I've been struggling with is our, we had the grad panel last week, and I was thinking like, oh my gosh, like, how do you even keep your priorities in check? Which I definitely have more questions
about. Yes, happy to talk about that.
But first, when did you feel the pull from like counseling into like learning about school psych and being like, wow, that sounds like a fit for me?
Yeah. Yes, there's a few different answers for that. So my interests revolve around supporting youth. And so my research interests focus on, they're twofold. I have one aspect of my research that looks at supports for LGBTQ students, and then another facet of my research looks at wellness and physical activity promotion for youth. So both of those research interests are pretty interdisciplinary in nature. So I mean, I really, while I'm rooted in school psychology, I know that my research can sometimes sprinkle into counseling psychology or even clinical psychology in some regards. Yeah, but I really am focused on school as a place to support kids. Most kids are going to school, so that's a place that's prime for intervention and to really provide these supports for kids and loop in families and think about how teachers can be on the front line of intervention and referral systems. So school is a really unique place where you can think very systemically.
Yes.
So when you're working like one-on-one with a client, sometimes you don't have control, but that's not the quite word. Not quite the right word, but it is. It's more difficult to intervene at the system level.
There's a lot more variables that you can't see.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, but when you're in the school system, we can think about things like, you know, how often are teachers praising kids? How often are kids getting adequate nutrition during the day? How often are kids getting physical activity? What do affirming social justice practices look like in schools? So we can really think about shaping that environment to support all kids and really use like a public health approach to intervention.
Yeah.
So for schools, that's really exciting for me. Or is in a clinical setting, you come up against some more barriers to that.
Yeah.
And with that said, in schools, you, of course, can come up with barriers to employing those practices as well. But for me, as such a system thinker, that was a really natural bridge. Mm-hmm. And with that said, I mentioned before that my research interests are pretty interdisciplinary. I did actually apply to some counseling and clinical psych programs as well as school psych programs, given some professors were focused on that research across those three fields. Or the research that I was interested in. And something that you do get the same license when you become a psychologist, when you're in a school psych, clinical psych, or counseling psych program, and you're studying for your, you know, you get your clinical hours, you study for the ECCC test, and then you can get the license as a psychologist. I liked the training in school psychology because of that. Systemic perspective. The program at UMass, I was really passionate about it. I liked the faculty and the students there. And I also appreciated that I would also get credentialed as a school psychologist.
Right.
So in addition to being a psychologist, I also have the opportunity to work in schools as a building-based school psych provider if that ever became a career option for me.
So all of this amazing research that's being done in school psych, it's something that I've looked into as well, like just because like what you said, it's that's where kids spend, you know, 8 hours a day for 8 months out of the year.
Yeah.
How does implementing these things, what would that look like? Like, how do we take all this research that is so useful and that's really could really change lives? How does that go from being in somebody's dissertation to actually in practice, and like, how do you apply that to schools of different, like, varying levels of income for mm-hmm. those kind of programs?
Yeah, that's a great question, and something that the field is working really diligently on. There's a whole field of implementation science. We're looking at how do we implement this research with fidelity? And another question is, how do we close the research to practice gap? I think research is about 17 years ahead of practice. Or if we think about that, practice is about 17 years behind research.
Yeah.
And so that's really problematic, right? So there's been some data to support that. So I think it's really having scientist practitioners on the ground in schools that are strong distributors of research to think about employing these interventions. But there's so many variables to that. We need to have stakeholders on board. We need to have buy-in. We need to have motivation.
Yeah.
We need to have some funding and some resources. There's a lot of variables that go into that. But I do think one of the largest things that we need is buy-in, and for people to really say this is important and this makes sense for our community and there's a need for it.
Yeah.
And we can conduct a needs assessment and know that this research could fill this void or support this practice. That's really key.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because then you're having lots of people who aren't psychologists trying to implement mm-hmm. psychological research. I could see how fidelity could get like, or if you've been teaching for 30 years, you know, like, I think I do a great, I think this goes pretty well. And then being kind of having to switch it up would definitely make it more difficult to implement new ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great point. So in looking at like a systems perspective, how do we think of the school psychologist as a consultant?
Yeah.
So if they're consulting with teachers, if they're consulting with administrators, and able to be that distributor of research and someone who can then check the fidelity of the intervention. That way it's not just one person holding the ship, mm-hmm. right? There's lots of players, and then the school psychologist is able to really go around and lead that effort in some ways.
No, that's so move on to a little bit more concrete questions here. So you earned your master's degree before pursuing your PhD. Mm-hmm. In what ways has that experience aided you in your pursuit of a doctorate now?
Yeah, it's a great question. So as I mentioned, I did my master's degree in mental health counseling. So was very focused on direct clinical work. I had a practicum and an internship at a community mental health center. I was providing individual psychotherapy to mostly like youth and adolescents, which means also working with parents and families, of course, and then some adult clients. And that experience was so foundational to my training because it allowed me to draw upon my clinical work when I was in my PhD program. I was like, oh yeah, this relates to this concept. Or yeah, I remember seeing this with this client, this makes sense now. And I wonder if I could have done this instead.
Yeah.
So it really provided a strong foundation in building therapeutic rapport, learning some important theoretical orientation, counseling intervention, really working as a mental health provider and starting to gain that professional identity and understanding like, what do work values look like for me? What do I want from a job? Why do I want to get a PhD?
Yeah.
Why don't I want to stop at the master's level? So I was able to really ask myself those questions and assess them. And so having that opportunity gave me the space and opportunity to do that. And I also felt like in my master's program, I was able to engage in quite a bit of research as well, because my master's program was housed in a department with a PhD program as well. So I was working on a couple fields of research, both of which related to exercise and physical activity for mental health. So that was sort of allowed me to narrow in on my research interests more, because I didn't quite know what my research was in like a narrow view.
Yeah.
I feel like I knew broadband what I was interested in, like child mental health. That's so broad. There's so much there. And And so I was able to engage in more research. I was able to really think about what questions do I have? Where are the gaps? And how could some research that I engage in fill those gaps? So really thinking about myself as a scientific practitioner.
So in our non-recorded conversations, you mentioned that when you first applied to doctoral programs, you weren't sure if you were really ready yet. How do you feel like you've developed? So we talked a little bit about professionally coming up with a more narrow research focus, things like that. Actually, I applied for this research thing recently. And, it was a couple months ago before having all these wonderful conversations with like how to narrow in your research interests. And I was looking back at the application yesterday and I said, I'm interested in social, developmental, or personality psych. Like, you can't get more broad than that. That really put things in perspective for me on how like, we have some work to do.
Those are really great interests and you can certainly find your niche in those fields.
So how do you feel like you developed personally to be able to take this huge step towards, you know, such a pretty grueling journey towards a doctorate?
Yeah. And this is specific to what part of my educational journey were you asking?
Let's say about how do you feel like personally you now, in between the time that you graduated college through your bachelor's and then completing your master's, do you feel like you developed enough as like a person to have the grit to go after something like such a long-term goal?
Yeah, definitely. So I think I've been described as very tenacious and ambitious. And I think sometimes the tenacity can override like my cognitive processing sometimes.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So I think there were times where I felt I was ready and I wasn't. Mm-hmm. And that time was right after, like right before I graduated, I was applying to a mix of doctoral and master's programs. And I was like, I really want this, mm-hmm. but I didn't quite know my research interests yet. I didn't quite know myself and my own values as much as I do now. And I think having the work experience allowed me to think about, okay, how do I structure my time? What do I want from a career? I think personally, I was able to just understand my own identities more, gain some more self-awareness, think about what I want from a career in working as a mental health provider. Why do I want to work as a mental health provider? Yeah. How do I want to split up research, clinical work, and teaching, which I'm happy to talk to you about. What does that look like for me? So I think while engaging in my master's program, doing mostly clinical work, I was like, oh wait, I kind of want to also have a hold in research. I want to also teach. So I was able to see what I'm missing, what I'm wanting more of.
Yeah.
And then also the master's program allowed me to see that, yes, I am tenacious and now I understand what I want to do.
Yeah.
And so I think
that's just, getting at the wall, seeing what sticks.
Yes. So I think that allowed the, ambitiousness and the readiness to intercept a little bit more, which needed to happen. And then I think that allowed me to feel more successful in my doctoral program.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
No, absolutely.
Okay.
It's definitely like talking to my fellow undergrads at Judge Baker, like I feel like all of us share that like that drive, you know?
Yeah.
And I know that for myself I definitely like always, you know, pushing, always grinding. And I feel like some of the advice that a lot of people give me is like, it's okay to slow down. You don't need to do the hardest thing like as soon as you can, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to prove it to yourself. You don't have to prove it to other people. Like, it's okay to take your time.
And I think it's hard. I think for people who have their eyes on a prize and they're really goal driven, it can be really difficult to stay in the moment. Like, even in my master's program, there are times where people would ask me what I'm doing, and I would say, I'm getting my master's in mental health counseling, and I'd like to go for a PhD at some point.
Yeah.
But I couldn't just say, like, I'm going for my master's in mental health counseling, or as I think, Like, it was always like, what's next?
Yes.
And I think sometimes if there's a lesson it's something I'm working on now, like, how do I stay in the moment and savor like all those amazing learning experiences? And even in the way that I spoke about that, like, masters and then this, mm-hmm. like, if I were to stop at masters and just savor that and think about all that I'm learning, wow. I just wonder like how that would further shape my experiences. Because I think there's something to living in the future that's not necessarily always it's important to some regard and to other regards it doesn't fully allow me to be present. I think it's something that a lot of my colleagues have experienced as well. I think in this field we're all so goal driven, which is great. And I think that is also a bit of a difficulty to navigate as well.
No, absolutely. Like, even now going into my sophomore year of college, now like I'm thinking like, okay, what kind of program would I want for like something that could be, you know, 6 years.
Right. Which is so great. So it's like that yes and the thing. Yes. Like it's so wonderful. And I wonder like what the pros and cons are of that, because that's important to plan. We don't want to plan too much. Yeah. So there's always just the next step. And I think it's something that we're all
doing. Yeah. It's something that I think that I loved that we talked about at in our non-recorded conversations about like
plans, not always.
Yeah. About being okay with changing up your plans, you know, because I feel like that's something that, you know, because all through high school, all of that is like, okay, well, I want to be a therapist. And now it changes every day. You know, I'm like, oh, I'd love to be a researcher and professor. Oh, maybe I'm a clinician and a professor. Researching it all in one and like trying to decide. It's really exciting, but then, right, that part of me that wants to plan is like, well, Maddie, okay, you're doing this child development, behaviorism internship. Like, is that what you want to do? It's like, I love it, but there's a lot of like things to sample still, mm-hmm. you know, and try not to get too narrowed in before I've, really explored all those other interests as well.
Yeah. And in some ways it feels safer to narrow in, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think
yeah.
knowing that there's still more to sample can feel scary.
Yeah. Especially in psychology, all those divisions, you know, it's very overwhelming for sure.
Yeah. It's like the unpredictability, like, oh, I just want to like this and then know what I'm doing and then call it a day. But, and there's more to sample.
It sucks when you like a lot about it. That's another thing that's cool about psychology is it sounds like it's a lot of lifelong learning.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And it allows you to sample more.
Yeah.
As long as you give yourself permission to do that.
Yeah.
Which I do. I think it's important to venture out. I think there's always so much to learn. Psychology is a huge field made up of so many disciplines. And I give myself permission to, you know, venture out of school psychology sometimes and, you know, talk to clinical psych folks and understand what's going on in other disciplines.
Absolutely. And even just like having that, those different lenses to look at problems with too, I feel like would so much fuel like different research questions. And like you said, you're very interdisciplinary.
Yeah.
Like, and I feel like what if you had zoned in entirely on like LGBTQ support, then you could be missing out on something else that's very important to you about physical health. Like, and having the, I think something else that's really cool about doing your own research is being able to kind of come up with something new for yourself and be an expert in something totally that hasn't been asked before. That's so crazy. Asking questions that nobody really thought about. What kind of things, while you were looking for your doctoral program, what kind of things did you prioritize? Because you talked a bit about, so I have a lot of clinical experience now with the master's program. And then you mentioned teaching was something very important to you. So what drew you to Amherst? Like, what other things do people often consider when looking for that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I was interested in the APA accredited program.
Right.
So that's sort of like the broadband view.
The first filter.
Yeah, so on an APA accredited program, I wanted to be in a program that allowed me to think about they're really interested in. So it allowed me to think about school systems. And so school psychology was a really great field of study to look at. I also wanted to be in a program that was social justice focused and thought a lot about, it didn't just say the word social justice, but actually enacted social justice principles allowed us to think really systemically and understand the privileges and oppressions of different identities and what that means for how we're supporting youth and families. I also wanted a program that was really collaborative.
Yeah.
I appreciate that my program, you know, we work together as a cohort, which I really valued. It's not like I don't feel like my advisor owns me. Like I didn't apply to her lab. I applied to the program. But I also worked with other professors in my program. So the collaborative approach is something that's really important to me. And I think that it gave the program culture a less competitive feel than other programs. Everyone was very friendly in my interview, very down to earth, and I really appreciated and valued that perspective. I also appreciated that I am able to engage in my own research questions. So while my advisor has, you know, shared some interests with me, I've been able to ask my own questions, engage in my own research studies. And she's been really supportive of that.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, it, you can tell when you're around people who want to see you succeed.
Yeah,
I feel, you know, that's something that's very cool about Judge Baker as well, is like feeling like everybody has your back, you know, even though we all kind of have the same job and things like that. Like, we all are working towards this bigger goal, you know. So while talking about your research interests. Something you mentioned before we started recording, like, hold on, let me get a pen and paper in case I think of anything, you know. Do you have that kind of same approach for coming up with research questions? Is it a strike of inspiration? Is it something that you personally have mulled over, your personal experience maybe shaped your interests?
Yeah, all of the above for sure. So I'd be glad. So my personal experience has absolutely shaped my research. People joke sometimes and say research, because you find that you find yourself in your research sometimes.
Yeah.
So my work looks at, you know, LGBTQ youth. I identify as part of that community. My work also looks at physical activity and mental health, which I'm a proponent of, and know that, you know, exercise is a great mental health promoter for me and really allows me to feel sharper during the day, feel like I can focus more, feel less anxious. So I find that, you know, it's interesting how you can see yourself in the work, but I've also seen how useful both LGBTQ support and physical activity are by talking to other people and also seeing gaps in the literature.
Yeah.
And so when I was doing research in my master's program, I was doing some work on like life skill development through physical activity for youth. And I was thinking a lot about that. And I loved that research. That was really cool. And I was looking at how like school counselors can be effective collaborators with coaches to foster life skills for kids. And then after that study, I was like, huh, I wonder, like, if we were to think of like population specific, like LGBTQ kids, does that change the game a little bit? Like, no pun intended. With like how they feel about coaches and PE teachers,
right?
And how are those stakeholders trained to think about sport in a really inclusive way to foster life skill and healthy relationship to physical activity. And so then I thought even more, and I was like, okay, so we know that LGBTQ youth have more mental health risk, they have less school connectedness, sports are often pretty gender normative and can be homophobic in some regards and transphobic. And then I was like, okay, well, what does that mean for the interventionists of sport or the teachers of sport? And where do school psychologists have a role in helping out with that environment to foster mental health and provide a more inclusive environment? So then my wheels get spinning and I start to think of research questions. And then I'm like, okay, how can I start to chip away at this? What questions do I have? How can I chip away at this really big concept to understand it? So like my first, some of the first studies I did, like, was just really systematic literature reviews of LGBTQ youth in sport and then in physical activity, and then a systematic review on physical activity interventions in school psychology. And I was like, okay, like, there's definitely, there are some gaps in the research. And now I know where the gaps are in a really systematic way. And I can see that research is needed to provide more support to increase outcomes for these populations.
Yeah. Wow. That makes a lot of sense. And I feel like when talking about more marginalized groups, like the LGBTQ community, all of that, like, I feel like it really speaks to the importance of like representation well in research. If it is so defocused, like, you know, it makes a lot of sense how only the past 20 years we've been getting research about like more minorities, more women, more LGBTQ issues. Like, interesting little quinky dink there. The more inclusive the research world becomes, the more representational of the population at large becomes.
Mm-hmm. And it's also ensuring like there is a need for this work. And so I think really, yes, I had an interest, and then doing my systematic reviews and really seeing the gaps there, I was like, okay, there's a need for this. Like, people are saying, like, we need more research on this. We need more support for LGBTQ students. We need more physical activity intervention to support mental health of kids. So then you're really thinking about, okay, what are my next steps now?
Yeah. No, that makes so much sense. Because when you first talk about it, it's like, well, how does that even overlap? Like, absolutely. The fact that this whole like sector of the population is missing out on those, right? Those community ties that like so many people benefit from sports, like the confidence that you can build from it. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never thought about it like that. Mm-hmm. Moving on to, like we mentioned earlier, a little bit about work-life balance. How do you maintain perspective on your priorities as you're working towards?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. And it is something I struggle with, honestly. Like, it's something that I continuously work on and try to navigate. And I think a lot of people in my position would say similarly. I have been really working on scheduling my time, setting more boundaries around my time. I could be writing for 10 hours a day because I'm working on my dissertation right now. But that would not necessarily be the healthiest thing for me to do, right? I also need to think of other priorities, you know, family, partner, friends. Like, those are so important. They're your supports. They're, you know, people you love to spend time with. And it's really important to set those boundaries to say, I am doing this today, and I'm also going to exercise. So I think giving yourself permission to do that is important, and in questioning the guilt that can come up when you're not working.
Yeah.
I think that being in a PhD program, there's a bit of a yes culture. Like, yes, I'll work on this. Yes, I'll work on this. And sometimes I think it's okay to say, yes, I'll work on this at a later date, or don't know if I can get to that. And I think setting those boundaries is really key. And I think for a lot of people in the field, we are people that like to make other people happy. So it can be hard to say no sometimes. But I think it's one of the greatest things we can do for ourselves as professionals, because we really have to set our own boundaries. So I'm working a lot on that. And it's been a journey in trying to navigate like work-life balance.
Yeah.
Like the million-dollar question.
Yeah, right. that's another thing to consider when you think about that. Like, a person who clocks out at 5, like, they go home and they, you know, they kind of, I wonder, do they have it all figured out? You know, they just spend time with their family and like, oh, grill out, whatever people who don't are doing doctoral programs do. So it's definitely like, I could see how what you're talking about with like the gap in the research, seeing like there's a need for this, you know, like, people would really benefit from the research that I'm doing something that it can be really applied as well.
Mm-hmm.
Does that factor into like how, you know, when it's 4 a.m. and you have a check mark tomorrow or whatever, like, is that, and what other factors kind of drive you to continue making sacrifices of your time, of, you know, some, you know, more fun things that you could be doing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I do love my work. So I enjoy doing it. There are days where it is quite stressful, and you're right. It is, you know, getting up at a really early time in the morning or staying up late to work on a project can feel grueling sometimes. And I know, like, all right, this is gonna get out there, and hopefully that will like set the way for some more research questions or allow for some more practical implications. And it's exciting to see it moving forward. So I think that momentum that is slowly starting, like, okay, like I think there's a small part that I can do to provide some support.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy that aspect of research. Like I said, I view myself as like a scientific practitioner. Like, how am I providing research to support the field, or how am I providing research to foster, you know, some stronger clinical implications and outcomes? And then when I'm in the field, how can I use research to support clients?
Yeah. So part of your self-care is like setting boundaries. These more like kind of things that are harder to picture. What are some ways that like, what is a day in the life for you look like? Mm-hmm. Like, you wake up at probably like, how do you yeah. make time in your daily life between at different stages as well of the doctoral process? How does your self-care routine kind of change according to where you are in the what year you're in your program? Kind of different demands change that?
It's a great question. So I've always found that exercise is like my non-negotiable, so I'm typically unwilling to give up exercise. So I find that, I want to get my swimming or go running. That's really important for me. That's something that I kind of have marked in my calendar just about every day. So that's sort of been universal throughout my entire doctoral program. Interestingly, I mentioned I have some difficulty with work-life balance and setting boundaries and protecting my time. I have improved immensely from when I first started my program. So it's funny you asked me that, because I can see how like I've grown in that domain without even realizing it. So I used to get up at, you know, 3:45 and try to finish a reading for class. And I would go to the gym, and then I would go to class, and then I would, you know, have a meeting, have research group. Maybe I have to do some clinical work, and then I would be done for the day and then have more reading to do.
Yeah.
It was like, it was a grueling process. And then I, you know, it's important to have really strong supports around you. Like my partner, my family would say like, yeah, make sure you're taking care of yourself. Mm-hmm. And then my partner set a boundary where like, he's like, don't get up until 5 a.m. He's like, stop getting up before 5 a.m. because you're just too tired, and that's not going to actually help you in the long run. Yeah. I was like, okay. So then I started, you know, getting up at 5 a.m., which felt a little bit more reasonable too.
And
I was able to.
The sun's starting to come up.
Yeah. Able to prioritize a little bit more what needs to get done right now. I got into you get more into a rhythm of what it looks like to be a doc student. So maybe I can spend a little bit less time on this, the more time on this. How do I prioritize this? And as you get further into your program and you form relationships with professors, sometimes you can say, you know, I'm not sure if I can get to that project that we talked about. Or just, you know, upfront, say if they're saying we need someone to work on this project, like, I'm not sure if I can do that right now. But I find that was a lot harder to do my first and second year, because I was kind of wanting to prove myself a little bit. So I found that as I got into like third and fourth year, I had an easier time setting those boundaries.
Yeah, as you worked on those relationships, you had more, like, they knew you'll do the work.
Yeah.
They knew that they could trust you, but being able to show the professionalism to be able to set those boundaries as well.
Yeah. So it sort of shows them like, one, I'm good for it. Like, I'm going to get, like, I do my work. Two, I have done a lot of work and I kind of have, you know, I've been publishing, I've been doing presentations. So they're like, okay, if he's not doing this, like,
yeah,
they're not going to, I don't feel like they're going to perceive me as lazy, but
yeah,
I know that I'm working on some other projects.
Right. And I feel like also that would show, like, you know, I want to be able to give it my full attention.
Right. Yeah.
It really shows important. Your work values. You know?
Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like to think so.
Yeah. So what aspect of your program in general has been the most fun?
Mm-hmm.
Like, not even just necessarily academically with like, oh, research teaching, or but like forming relationships, working with the people that you talk to for your research.
Yeah.
Like, what part of your day is the most fun?
I think it is really exciting to be in a professional environment where you can ask lots of questions that might not have answers yet. And you can just have these amazing brainstorm sessions and feel so intellectually fueled. That doesn't happen in a lot of other workplaces outside of academia.
Yeah.
Or maybe there's some think tanks. Yeah, there's there's a lot. There's some pockets. But that to me was really exciting. I was like, ah, like, we're all brainstorming different things. We're all so passionate. So I think being at like this, you know, research intensive university that also values clinical work and also values social justice, like, we had these amazing conversations and such amazing support, and that allowed me to grow immensely as a professional.
Yeah. Oh my God, I can't wait. So can you tell me a little bit about teaching, what that experience was like, kind of after spending so much time as a student to be in front of the classroom?
Yeah, and as a doc student, it's so interesting. I'd be like teaching classes and then teaching other guy classes after. So I was like living a double life now. Yeah, so I've been really fortunate to teach quite a few classes at UMass, and I even designed one of my own courses.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, so I was able to design a course all about benefits of physical activity for youth. And it was an undergraduate class that I taught online, which was really, you know, I learned so much about working with students, and I love supporting students in the classroom setting. I think it's a great place to have lots of conversations, you know, brainstorming, and just disseminating information.
Yeah.
I find that really powerful. So yeah, so I've taught that class. I taught basic concepts of human development. I taught child development. And I also taught a course called Love and Work, which looks at like how we infuse positive psychology into our lives. So
that's really cool.
Yeah, and that was also online. So the two human development classes were in person, the other two were online. So I've been really fortunate to teach, and I really like being in front of the classroom and, you know, giving students permission to be vulnerable and think about the content in ways that, you know, resonate with their lenses and worldviews, and provide a safe space for students to think.
Yeah, to ask those questions.
And ask those questions, yeah.
Yeah. No, that's definitely something that is very appealing to me about, like, doctoral work, is being able to work with students who are just having their interest piqued in this.
Yeah.
Is that something that you see yourself like, wow, I'd love to do that for some point in my career?
Yeah, definitely. So I see my career going in both a clinical and research position. So I would like to be a faculty member at a school psychology program, and then I would love to have a practice on the side.
Yeah.
So so specifically what that would look like is in a school psych program, I would be teaching graduate students, supervising students, clinical work, leading research groups, and then on the side, I would really like to provide youth psychological support, specifically therapy and some assessment, and maybe even school consultation.
Yeah, it's very exciting, like with the way that seems like having your doctorate really opens up a lot of options for your career to evolve based on like whatever needs you might have in your life at that point too.
Yeah, I like the idea of evolve. It's really interesting because oftentimes I think of it as like, it gives us lots of options. But I think if you frame it as evolve, you can see how you really grow with the field as well and with the options. So that's a really awesome perspective.
Yeah. So what are some ways that you hope to see like the higher education system changing in the next few years?
I'd love for it to be more affordable.
Right.
Yeah, higher education in terms of training teacher psychologists or undergraduate, like
I'd say more at the graduate level.
Yeah.
Based on your experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a great point. Yeah, so in terms of thinking about what I would like to see change in the higher education system, they're related. I've read some research to show that there's a lot of negative mental health outcomes for graduate students. And I think that the higher education system is one that is embedded in that yes culture.
Yeah.
And it's like, keep working, keep working. I recently read something the National Alliance on Mental Illness put out, and it talked about how society praises the person who doesn't stop working and does not provide that same praise to someone who values work-life balance.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, upon my own experiences as someone who can struggle with work-life balance, I think I've been embedded in a system that really emphasizes work, work, work. And I think, you know, words like self-care are discussed, but it's hard to find the opportunities to easily engage in self-care.
Yeah.
So I would like more structures to be put in place in the higher education system to really support graduate students as, you know, having lives outside of their doctoral program, because I think you would see even better work productivity if graduate students felt like they had permission to do that.
Yeah, no, especially at that time in your life too, I feel, when a lot of people are pursuing their doctorates, it's when, you know, a lot of people are getting married, starting to have, you know, children, making investments in houses, things like that. And I can definitely see how the lack of room to pursue those kinds of personal life things would be discouraging and honestly just like another layer of kind of the stress that candidates already trying to balance.
Yeah, and I'm definitely not trying to scare your listeners at all. Like, I love my doctoral program. Like, I've had a wonderful experience, but it can be hard to negotiate those sometimes. But it can be done.
Yeah, and like and a lot like, you know, your undergrad degree is, it's an investment. It's just a couple years of super duper hard work, and then you're gonna come out on the other side, and you have this this knowledge, and not just the degree, but like, right, those relationships that you're forming, the conversations that you're having in that setting, I feel like definitely balance out like the sacrifices that you do make.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's not even a sacrifice, it's just delayed a couple of years. So in that same vein, what advice would you have for people who are just starting their journey through higher education?
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's say for a junior in their bachelor degree program.
Yeah. Ask lots of questions. I think sometimes, I know just from myself, when I think back to undergrad and the undergrad students I've taught, I think sometimes people can be nervous to ask questions in their classes because you're like, I don't want to sound stupid, or I should know this, or everyone else knows this. I think it's really important to be vulnerable and ask those questions and reach out to your professors and form relationships with them, because they have been through the graduate school journey. So, and asking those questions is going to allow you to see what you want to do.
Yeah.
Or what you're interested in right now.
Yeah, definitely. Like the day that I woke up and like realized, oh, like people want to help you.
Yes.
Like people want to see you succeed.
Absolutely.
I feel like once you have that mindset, like that vulnerability comes so much easier because you feel like, well, like, you know, you're not going to become a professor if you don't love working with your students, you know?
Totally.
And
I love when students like swing by and ask me questions or email me or even ask a question in class that can be about just, you know, something that they might perceive as concrete, but like, you know, 15 other kids in the class want to ask the same question.
Yeah.
15 other students in the class want to ask the same question.
Yeah.
So I think that's just really important to consider.
Yeah. So I guess my favorite question to ask in our interviews, how has studying psychology changed the way that you interact with other people, with yourself, and maybe just like the world at large?
Yeah. So I think really analytical people are drawn to the field. Mm-hmm. So I'm such a curious person and I ask lots of questions. I really enjoy meeting people and talking with them and finding out their experiences. And studying psychology has allowed me to become a better listener. So
yeah.
I think it's helped me really take in what people are saying, not just hear, but really listen. And I think that's been a great skill that I've learned and how it affects me day to day. I think it also allows me to understand like larger systemic issues that are affecting people's behaviors. You know, I think so often, you know, we might hear someone talking about someone and they say, this person is this, you know, they're talking about them, but really there are so many factors and structures and experiences that have supported their behavior or worldview to be in such a way.
Yeah.
So I think that it's allowed me to have a really strong lens on the many factors that are affecting us.
Yeah, no, definitely something that I've noticed, even just like scrolling through the Facebook feed, you know, and your relatives, like, whatever. And just seeing like how present that dispositional attribution, like, tendency that we have is.
I think it's so funny you were talking about scrolling through the news feed, because I even get to a point now where I'll be scrolling and I'm like, why did they post this?
Yeah.
Like, so what was the function?
Do you want someone to agree with you?
Yeah. I'm like, and then we know that the likes feed into dopamine. So I'm like, well, are they wanting to get a certain amount of likes? So I definitely do need to dial that down sometimes. And just another thing of studying psychology, I also need to, I think it's also important to sometimes not go to that place in time so you can get in your own head.
I know. It's definitely hard to turn off. You know, even if you're like, you're like having an argument with your partner, so you can't even just argue because you're gonna be like, well, okay, I see your point. Like, you have to like talk like adults. You know, it's hard
so
to get
funny.
Mad at people. You know?
So, yeah, you know, you're thinking, yeah. And I think it's okay to give yourself permission to feel this.
Yeah.
No,
that's another aspect of it I don't really think about a lot, is like when you are like, well, I'm being irrational because of this and this, like, and then also realizing like, okay, you know, I'm still a person, but I'm not gonna be able to be the most neutral, like totally calm, zened out, like major person.
For sure. I think it's really important to recognize like our own you know, stressors, and it's important. I think it's so useful, and it makes us stronger as clinicians, because you want to really know yourself, and it's so important to really be in touch with who you are. And I think that can further fuel your compassion to support other people.
No, I definitely can see that, because like I feel like if we do have this idea of like you know, the practitioner being like a totally, oh yeah, I'm a professional, you know, like I have no biases, like, you know, being able to recognize like, oh, Okay, if you can't recognize, like, oh, this person's kind of rubbing me the wrong way, if you're not able to tell yourself that and be like, yeah, okay, I need to kind of watch my body language, I need to, like, you know, then
right,
that could be interfering as well with kind of care that you're giving.
Yeah, so how do you give yourself permission to really think about how you're feeling about that person, why you're feeling that way? And it's really important. Yeah.
All right, that's all the questions that I have for you, but thank you so much. This was such an insightful interview.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much to Scott Greenspan for all of your insight, your authenticity, and your enthusiasm for what you do. It is so inspiring to see.
Yeah, and for all the insight into the process of applying to PhD and master's programs and all the things involved with that, narrowing down a research interest was all very helpful as an undergraduate to hear what that looks like a few years down the road.
Definitely. It's really important we have these opportunities to have these kinds of conversations so we know what the hell we're doing. So thank you again. And another friendly reminder to like us on Facebook, check out our website. We have a website. I think it looks great. And if you have a friendly neighborhood psychologist who you think we would benefit from talking to, or if you're wondering, well, that's so broad, who are you looking for? We have all the sorts of different things that we're interested in talking about on our website. So please, please check that out and email us if you have a match.
Yep. Go to the website and check out the referrals page for a long list of all the people we're looking to talk to.
Yes, quite. Quite a long list. Yeah. And like, rate, subscribe.
All those great things. And come join us next time on Preoccupied. Sure.
I'm sure that's relatable. Hashtag relatable.
Totally.